This is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Globally, the life expectancy of a baby born in 2016 was 72 years. That's according to the World Health Organization. And that's decades longer than it would have been 100 years earlier. It's 5.5 years longer than it would have been even as recently as 2010. Much of the increase in life expectancy globally has come from the decline of infectious diseases due to better hygiene, vaccines, and antibiotics. But my next guest says that there's a dark side to all this progress that needs more attention. Thomas Boyke is the director of the Global Health Program at the Council on Foreign Relations, an adjunct professor of law at Georgetown University, and his new book is Plagues and the Paradox of Progress, Why the World is Getting Healthier in Worrisome Ways. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
First, give us the good news. I mean, how much better off are we than, say, 100 or even 50 years ago?
Well, the good news is very good news. We are significantly better off. In 1950, there were nearly 100 countries where 1 out of 5 children perished before their 5th birthday. That included almost every nation in sub-Saharan Africa, South Asia, Southeast Asia. Today, that happens nowhere. For the first time in recorded human history, viruses, bacteria, and other infectious diseases do not cause the majority of death and disability in any region of the world. Life expectancy in low- and middle-income countries is now 70. HIV has declined 40% since 2003. Malaria, TB, tuberculosis, and diarrheal diseases by a quarter. So really dramatic improvements.
Those are, what you were just listing, mostly infectious diseases. And obviously, they've played a large role in determining life expectancy. But you also note that 2/3 of the gain in American life expectancy actually predates things like antibiotics and treatments for infectious diseases. So how important are infectious diseases versus all of the other types of health problems and challenges that could shorten life expectancies?
So historically, improvements, particularly improvements in reducing deaths from infectious diseases and child mortality, have been hugely important. They have been the path to prosperity and inclusion. The economist Robert Gordon has cited the decline of infant mortality between 1890 and 1950 as one of the single most important facts in the history of American economic growth. China in the 1950s, really through the 1970s, was poorer than Chad, Benin, and Niger when it undertook an all-out peasant-based war on infectious diseases that helped create the conditions that led to that country's rise to global economic power. But we're seeing less of that now, and that's in part for the reason that you referenced before, that in the past, health improvements have occurred differently than they're occurring now.
In what ways? So, I mean, you say again in the book that countries where the decline in infectious diseases has happened more recently, they haven't seen the same kinds of socioeconomic benefits going along with that. So why not?
Yeah. So as you cited in the United States, to take that as an example, the majority of the gains in life expectancy that we have experienced in this country since 1870 occurred before the widespread public availability of antibiotics and the development of most vaccines. It happened through changing social norms around the value of children, improved hygiene, better housing laws to reduce overcrowded tenements, and innovations like the pasteurization of milk, reductions of the use of child labor and labor laws to reduce crowded factories, and improvements in sanitation. These types of shoe leather public health innovations and infrastructure in the past really are what drove most of the progress in developed countries like the United States. What we're seeing now in low- and middle-income countries, and especially in the last 20 years, is it's really been driven more by more effective medicines and international aid initiatives, which have done an enormous amount of good. The challenge is that with those more effective medicines and international initiatives, we have gotten much better at reducing infectious disease and child deaths in deeply poor countries with dysfunctional governments and limited infrastructure. But too many of these countries have remained deeply poor countries with dysfunctional governments and limited infrastructure. And without that broader social improvement, many of the good things that come along with better health, like a rising young adult generation, less deadly cities, a shift in health needs to adults, these are now potential engines of impoverishment and instability rather than just a path to prosperity that they once were.
Thomas Boyke, your book is called Plagues and the Paradox of Progress, and obviously you're highlighting that there are different ways to address infectious diseases. Some of them come with socioeconomic co-benefits. Some of them do not. But what's the paradox that you're talking about?
So the paradox is that we've had enormous progress reducing child deaths and infectious disease in these deeply poor countries, but that progress, in part, is producing a new set of unexpected and worrisome challenges that have the potential to undermine all the progress that has occurred.
You note that in addition to the fact that there have been other diseases like heart disease and diabetes that have actually been rising more quickly in these poorer nations than they are in wealthy nations like the United States, that there may also be a connection between the decline in, you know, routine or mundane infectious diseases and the occasional outbreaks of severe diseases like Ebola that, again, tend to disproportionately affect these really poor nations. What's the connection there?
Yeah, so you see an increase in both areas, both on the potential risks of unexpected emerging infectious disease outbreaks like Ebola, but also a dramatic increase in chronic diseases like cancer, diabetes, and respiratory illnesses. Now, on the emerging infectious disease outbreaks, that risk is increased because you have growing populations, and because cities have become less deadly, you have rapid urbanization in many low- and middle-income countries. When you have people crowded together in settings where you still have a pretty limited health infrastructure, because, as you'll remember, many of these benefits have really been driven more by medicine than infrastructure or strong public health systems. And because that is the case, when you have an unexpected outbreak, it's more likely to spread in an urban environment and less likely that the health system can control that. And the classic example of this is really the West Africa Ebola outbreak in 2014, when the three countries that were affected by that, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea, really were doing well on a lot of global health metrics. They had extended their life expectancy, in Liberia's case, to over 60. They had really high rates of measles vaccination, sadly a problem with that we're struggling with here now. So they were doing really well on a lot of the metrics we base on in global health, but struggled in dealing with an unexpected disease outbreak that ultimately the treatment for has been really just supportive care and IV. The ability to have that type of treatment and the ability to track and trace the outbreak was beyond those health systems.
Thomas Boyke, we're talking about, you know, with Ebola, a disease that is killing people. But you also write in your book that the influence of infectious diseases extends well beyond the death toll. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so infectious diseases, the decline of them, have shaped the fortunes of economies, the geography of cities, and the movements of people. And to take the fortunes of economies, you know, as we mentioned before, in the past, the decline of infectious diseases have really been the way that countries have grown economically. When you have less people dying as children and infants, of course, you get a rising young generation of adults. That has potential benefits for the labor force and, you know, ability, people who can take factory jobs and join the assembly line. It also means that you have fewer children dying, which means, by and large, people start having fewer of those children because they don't need to have as many without their death rate being so high. And with the decline of fertility, you have more women joining the workforce, more investment in the education and health of those children that women decide to have. So it has compound benefits for economies. What you're seeing now, though, in many low- and middle-income countries is that you're seeing a rapid growth in the young adult population, but not necessarily the economic or job opportunities that can keep up with that. So to give an example, the World Bank says by 2050, low- and middle-income countries will add 2.1 billion adults to the workforce. At current employment rates, that means nearly 900 million people without jobs. Each year for the next 10 years, sub-Saharan Africa will add 11 million people to the workforce, and currently the region of sub-Saharan Africa is producing about 1 to 2 million jobs per year. So there's a significant shortfall.
Thomas Boyke, if I'm understanding the argument that you're making here and that you make in your book, Plagues and the Paradox of Progress, it's basically that maybe we need to pay a little bit less attention to infectious diseases and more to other social and health challenges facing, in particular, some of the world's poorest nations. Is this an idea that you see gaining traction or being viable at this point?
I do, certainly in some corners. You know, when I started out working on this several years ago, there really wasn't much happening in this space. But really in the last year, the World Bank has really focused on investments in human capital, trying to encourage particularly low- and middle-income country governments to invest in having higher quality education systems, higher quality healthcare systems, the types of investments that might improve the employability of their populations. That has been a big focus, and it's recognizing that, again, we have in some poor regions of the world very fast-growing populations that will need work. Ultimately, the types of problems we're describing, first and foremost, are the responsibility of the national governments of those nations. Nobody can build a quality health system for you. Nobody can run and improve the quality of your schools. That really can only be done by those governments. But there are things we can do to try to support them in this process and make it easier. And those are some of the investments that the World Bank is looking at. So I'm not pessimistic about the prospects for the future, but I do think we're at a critical inflection point where we have to realize that the dynamics in these countries are changing and we need to recalibrate our investments accordingly.
Thomas Boyke is the director of the Global Health Program at the Council on Foreign Relations, an adjunct professor of law at Georgetown University, and author of Plagues and the Paradox of Progress. Thanks so much.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Up next, the promise of the quantum revolution and what that even means. There's more Living Lab Radio after the break.